At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fella, the tuna country Matt Kempf, and bellied up to the bar is nobody tonight. Freddie is currently enjoying a week out in Big Sky Country.
You know, me just trying to envision Freddie in Montana is the weird. Like, Freddie's a beach guy. Like, yes. That's like putting me in the beach. Like, I don't belong at the beach. Freddie doesn't belong in the mountains. I don't know how this work is working out there, but I've seen some pictures, and don't get so damn close to the buffalo. They will hurt you.
Yes.
I've seen countless videos, Fred, if you're listening, of buffaloes just tossing people.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's funny. When I was a kid, I was probably 11, 12 years old. We took a family vacation to South Dakota.
Yeah.
And we had one of those, like, Griswold station wagons, right?
Damn right.
And my sister and myself and this other girl from another couple of my parents' friends, we're all in the back in that glass-enclosed hatch, yeah. Right? Where we spent the entire, like, 30-hour drive out there or whatever it was. Well, we get on this, like, nature preserve thing where we're driving, and we were all bummed because we hadn't seen any buffalo. We get right to the end of this however many miles thing, and lo and behold, here's a buffalo coming up. And, of course, my dad's driving real slow and kind of easing over towards it. And I'm looking out the window at this thing.
Uh-huh.
And it got, I don't know how close it was, maybe 15, 20 feet. And that thing put its head down.
Uh-oh.
And came screaming at our car straight for me in that glass window. And I don't think that Pontiac, whatever it was designed to go 3 to 60 as fast as it did, but it did. And we got out of there. But that was my lesson.
It was just Ralphie, man.
Yes,
it was Ralphie. Like, he was just coming out ready to play some football.
Like, do not mess with those things.
Do you think Fred's got like a can of bear spray and he's just walking around spraying every animal that he sees? Just squirting it right in the face.
I do know he has a thing of bear spray.
I saw a
picture of that.
Yeah.
And he has his whistle.
I wonder how much hike he's actually doing.
I don't know. But he seems to be having a good time.
Good deal.
His biggest complaint, I think, so far is that they don't get cell service in a lot of places open country.
That's
out
another
there.
Thing. I think I would love that.
I believe you two could not be more opposite in that standpoint.
Vacations. Yeah, vacation-wise, we are opposite people.
So Fred's not here. There is a chance, if the logistics work out, that he is going to call in, and we will add that call to the end of the program. I know he has some thoughts, as you might imagine, about week one in college football.
I don't know what it could be.
No, no.
I have no idea.
No. We'll leave that kind of hanging in the ether for now. But
is it ether or ether?
Ether, ether.
Yeah, we'll call them both.
Ethernet, Ethernet, ether.
Yeah, Ethernet.
Yeah, whatever.
Either way.
But we will kind of leave that untouched for now. And if he is able to call in, I'm sure it will be worth it. At the very least, we are going to get his picks for the games next week. Speaking of picks, last week we had our first official picks of the season. We are going to be keeping track of our records throughout this football season. At the end, we will crown a official blockout picks champion. Freddie, starting out the season hot. Freddie starts out at 4-1.
Which, you know what kills me about that? Last week when we were doing our picks, he wasn't even ready.
No.
He's like, you guys go ahead. I'm going to sit here.
Because he had like 15 that picks.
And then he's just like, all right, this is what I'm going to go with. And just shot from the hip and somehow nailed those.
Yeah. So he goes 4-1. I went 3-2. Tuna, not bad. 2-3.
Yeah, it's bad.
Now, Colin. Colin brought the average down for everybody. As I was saying outside, the only reason Colin did not go 0-5, I think, is that he only sent in 4 picks last week. So he went 0-4. That makes us 9-10 overall in week one. I'm looking forward to a big bounce back for everybody, especially Colin this week as we move forward there. Also, want to remind everybody we're on social media. If you know someone who is a sports fan, particularly a football fan, and you think they might enjoy the show, please let them know that they can find us wherever they find their favorite podcasts. So, we are through week one. We obviously had some big-time games to kind of anchor week one, the local teams. We weren't going to spend a lot of time talking about Indiana had a very ho-hum, Coach Cignetti called it a pedestrian win. They were in control the whole game, but they left a lot of points on the board because they couldn't punch the ball in to the end zone in the red zone. They had a problem with that after last year being the number one team in all of college football in red zone offense. The biggest story to come out of the IU game is they had a pretty significant injury on the defensive side of the ball. Bryson Bonds is lost for the season with a knee injury, which will put a lot of pressure on Indiana's secondary. Obviously, they have D'Angelo Pons on one side of the field as their lockdown guy, but some other guys are going to have to step up. They play Kennesaw State this weekend, who should not present much of a challenge. Louisville played Eastern Kentucky last week. They blew them out, as we all knew they would. Tuna, you have a couple of words you want to say about that game?
I mean, not really. It was Eastern Kentucky. That was not a good football team. You know, Louisville did what they were supposed to do. I'm not going to say the defense looked good because it was Eastern Kentucky.
Right.
I'm not going to say Miller Moss looked good. I mean, he made some good throws, but it was not nothing spectacular, nothing to really dig into. I think that the biggest highlight is what we all expected was the running game looked to be there. And Kewon Brown, who got a lot of playing time filling in for Isaac Brown, who only got 6 carries. Duke Watson only got 1 carry. Kewon came in and he showed why Boise State was really trying to get him in the offseason. And I'm glad he stuck with Louisville. It's nice to have 3 options as opposed to 2.
Yeah. And so, one thing I did want to mention about Indiana is that there's been a lot of talk about how good and deep their running back room is there as well. And I thought, you know, they ran for, I think, 300 and some odd yards. But I thought Roman Hemby looked amazing. He's clicked to me from, and I know we don't overreact in week one, but from what I saw being in the building live, he seemed to be the clear cut number one tailback. Colin, you can absolutely, and he probably will disagree with me, I don't know, but he seemed to me to be the clear number one. I'm excited to see how they work him into the offense more ways, because they were, as you might imagine, extremely vanilla in that particular game. I think they will be equally, except maybe in the red zone, because I think Sig probably wants to make an emphatic statement in week two that our offense is still pretty good. So I look for Indiana to get on the right side of things this coming weekend. Kentucky had a tight game for the most part, just like we talked about. Their schedule ramps up significantly this weekend, as does Louisville's. Tuna, anything about the Kentucky game from last week stuck out to you?
I will say this. Offensive line, much improved from what it was last year. And
had
last,
to be,
last
right?
2 years, yeah,
had
it had
to be.
They kept the quarterback clean. He really was not under pressure all day, which makes him throwing for 86 yards, 87 yards.
A little problematic.
Even more embarrassing. Like I said, I just don't think this is a good football team. The defense, not bad. Really not bad at all. Alex Afari, we knew, best player on that team. He showed it. He's probably the one guy with pro potential on that team. I don't see Kentucky doing much this season. I don't know what the quarterback situations, if they're going to go to Cutter Bowley at any time soon. You paid this kid out of Incarnate Word a decent amount of money for whatever reason. I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe it'll get better.
Well, we shall see as they, as I said, ramp up significantly in competition level as – Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin come to town on Saturday. I believe that's a 3:30 kick. We'll get into all the week two games here shortly. But so we touched on the local teams. Now I want to get into the marquee games of week one. And we'll start with the marquee game of week one, where I think all of us were probably a little surprised that Texas – only scored 7 points. Now, Ohio State's defense appears to be really, really good. But is Texas not as good as we thought they might be? Or was that just a weird week one snafu?
I think that that was maybe the worst performance that we're going to see from Texas and Arch Manning all year long. They've got a couple cupcakes coming up. They can get it together. That Texas defense was still incredible. Like they played
right.
Great. The biggest concern I think Texas has is establishing a running game. That's not there. Any way to move the ball. I don't want to overreact and panic on Arch Manning. Like I said, I think that's the worst that he's going to look all year. Look, we've seen him come in last year. We've seen that the kid has talent. Right now, everybody's critiquing his throwing motion and saying he's not good anymore. I don't understand how somebody can go from a Heisman candidate to one of the worst quarterbacks in college football.
Right.
That quick. Look, the kid has talent. We're going to see it. Whether or not he is going to be a top-tier quarterback this year, that's yet to be seen. But I think he's got enough. This Texas defense has enough. They're going to compete, and they are going to have a shot to win the SEC.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I don't want to overreact. And Ohio State really surprised me. Matt Patricia on that, you know, him calling plays on that defense, to get that many transfers in with a new defensive coordinator that is as intricate and detailed as Matt Patricia is, and all the different schemes and packages, for them to be able to get that in week one the way that they did, super impressive.
Very much so.
And Julian saying – I'm not saying he's great, but he looks like, and like that may be one of the worst performances we see from him this year. So I know it's probably going to be the worst performance we see of Jeremiah Smith. It's very out of character for him to drop as many passes as he did.
Right. And I saw that analytically, whatever the computer spits out, that was the worst offensive performance of the Ryan Day era at Ohio State, and they still beat Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a pretty good sign.
Let's not forget, like, Texas had the ball on the goal line. right there. And they quarterback snuck it with Arch and got stopped right there. Yep. So, like, this could have easily been a 14-14 game. It's not like Ohio State just dominated this game. It was just an ugly defensive football game is what it was. Yep. And
Woody and Bo would have loved this game.
Definitely.
They would have loved
that. But, yeah, man, I enjoyed watching it. It was just like a lot of week one games, there was a lot of slop, man. There was some sloppy football being played this weekend, which is to be expected.
Sure.
And I think this one's highlighted a little bit more because it was the marquee game of the weekend.
Right.
So.
And, you know, and that is, we were talking about it on Sunday when you guys were here. I love it that college football has these big time games right off the bat from a fan's interest perspective. But from a quality of play perspective, I would love to see that game in like week three.
Yeah.
You know, where they can work out some of the kinks. And like, I'm very pleased that Indiana did not have to play a super quality opponent in week one or week two. Now, week three, I think, is carrying it a little too far. But, you know, selfishly, as that is my team, I want them to have as many, you know, good reps and work out the kinks before Illinois comes calling in week four. But it's impressive that Ohio, and, you know, the atmosphere there was awesome, and the whole core. I wanted to talk about Corso quickly. They did a great job with the tribute to him and stuff. And
I'm going to tell you the coolest thing about that is I was watching the Fox Big Noon Kickoff, and I was like, all right, I want to go back and watch the Corso tribute. And then I guess ESPN gave Fox the rights to air that. Fox actually aired the Corso last pick and all that stuff.
Wow.
And I thought that that was really cool that you got these two mega giant corporation company like channels, and they agreed that there's something special is going on and we should all air it.
Yeah.
And like, that's just really cool.
That is really cool. And let me tell you a quick story. Now, we're at the IU game. Pre-game starts at 2:30, and one of my best friends, Ben, you know, he kind of organizes these tailgates. Well, he has a son at IU that's in a fraternity, and so his whole fraternity comes over, and they're, you know, as college kids do, they're partying, having a great time, having beers or whatever. And we've got a, you know, four or five big tents set up with a big screen TV in there, and typically those kids don't care about any of that stuff. At 11:50, there were 200 kids in there, quiet. Turn the music off. Turn the music off.
Love that.
So that they could all hear and say that they saw the land. I mean, to me, that's like an unbelievable endorsement of what, because, you know, Corso means a lot to old guys like me and, you know, guys that are even your age, younger. And then to that younger generation in their early 20s.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the thing with Corso that resonates with me is a lot of these, like, sports shows, like, whether it's a college football show, a NFL show, everything's so buttoned up. It used to be. Everything was so buttoned up, and they were just, like, professionally talking. When Corso got in there, he brought, like, a fun element to it. He joked. He was very sarcastic. He was just, you know, it was just a different type personality than what we've seen on a lot of these pregame shows. And it really, it was transcending. It was.
You know, those young kids never got to see Corso in his prime on College game day. By the time they would have been paying attention, he'd already had some health issues and stuff, maybe lost a step or whatever. But man, you know, 20, 25 years ago,
it was
must-see television. I would never miss game day if I couldn't. The last few years, it's not been the same to me. I mean, that's just a thing of getting older.
Since they got David Pollack off of there, I think it's went downhill. Love David Pollack. Thought he was great.
He was very good. He was very good. But anyway, that was just a little aside. I did want to make sure we mentioned Coach Corso. He will obviously be very missed and thought of for years as one of the most important people, kind of the Dick Vitale, really, of college football.
Excellent comparison.
Who kind of, you know, brought it that sport to a whole new audience and made people see the game in a different way. And beyond all that, and I know a lot of people will only know him as the guy from television, but to me, he'll always be the guy that was the coach of my team when I fell in love with IU football. And so it's doubly cool for me.
Yeah. Know? There was I don't know if you heard the story when he was here at Louisville, he was trying to drum up ticket sales. And so the carnival was in town and they're like, ride this elephant down the street and then hand out tickets and stuff. And so he gets on this elephant and they're like, was it worth it? You know, did you guys achieve what you were going for? He says, hell no. He says the elephant had super thick hair that was jabbing into my legs the entire time. He said, my everything on my body is completely sore. I can't walk. And I handed out about 3 tickets. So that was Corso.
That was classic Corso. Yeah. Well, anyway, glad we got to mention Coach there. But wanted to move right into kind of what the other marquee night game that day was. And we talked about the battle of the fan bases, the battle of the tailgates. LSU goes into Clemson and wins a big ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that one?
Yeah. I went into this game, and my biggest concern for LSU is their offensive line. Now, my biggest concern for Clemson is their offensive line. It looked rough, but I'm going to tell you guys, all you LSU people listening, you got a defense.
Yeah.
Like, you finally got a defense. It's been a couple years, and it's kind of nice to see LSU have a defense again. They were flying around, man. They really stymied them. Klubnik looked rough. That offensive line looked rough. Clemson in need of a running game. There's a big hole there in that running game. I think Clemson has some worries. Like I said, I'm not going to overreact, but Clemson definitely has some concerns. And LSU, I think, looks like a contender to win the SEC. Definitely. I mean, Nussmeier, if you go through and you look at quarterback play across week one, he was probably, you know, top 2 or 3 across the board. He looked really good.
Yep.
Big fan of Nussmeier. Those receivers looked great. Nothing but praise for LSU. You shoved it in my mouth. I've said, you know, your defense, it's got to prove it to me. Your offensive line, I'm worried about it. Both questions were answered.
Absolutely. And speaking of receivers making great plays, how about those receivers in the Miami-Notre Dame game?
Yeah, man. The freshman, that freshman number 10, Malachi Tony, I believe is his name, that kid's going to be special. He was all over the place. Look, that's another thing. Miami, you got a defense now. Miami dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides, I thought. That offensive line looked amazing. I mean, they were textbook throughout. That defensive line, just a force. Like, they really were up front. Again, this was a crystal ball tried like hell to blow this game.
He sure did.
We got the full crystal ball experience with this, like normal. Miami, they impressed me. I am concerned that they kind of do have a tough schedule coming up here. And I think Cristobal's going to blow one or two of these games if he does that same kind of dumb shit that he was doing.
Right.
It's just, I don't know how you can have the talent that they seem to get year in and year out and completely underperform and he gets to keep his job.
Yeah.
It really is. And let's talk about Notre Dame.
I was going to say, speaking of baffling coaching decisions.
Did you forget that Jeremiah Love was on your team? I mean, what, four touches in the first half? I don't understand that. one of the big things that you heard about was how they were going to start getting Jeremiah Love involved in the passing game more this year.
Figuring out different ways to get him the ball in space and all that. I heard that 100 times.
I don't know if they just forgot that he was on the team, if he was in the doghouse for something. I don't know.
There almost has to be a backstory to it, right?
Maybe during practice, all he was doing was jumping. Because that seems to do every time he got the ball, he was just trying to hurdle people.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's about. So
I thought it was funny, Sean McDonough, when he finally got a touch after, I think what they said, it was like almost a full quarter without him touching the ball. And they finally gave him the ball, and he said, apparently out of witness protection, finally.
yeah, definitely.
You know, it was during the game, you know, even before the announcers, I think, had said anything, we're all watching it together, looking at each other, going, he's not even – a lot of those – he wasn't even in the game.
No.
A lot of those times.
Not at all.
Crucial downs.
I don't understand it. Something – there had to have been something going on there. I was starting to wonder if he was hurt, but then he'd come back in. And then I don't know. I have no idea. Did you happen to see a Marcus Freeman press conference? Because surely they was going to ask him about that.
I didn't.
There was so many like random like coaches taking shots at each other press conferences going on that I think that one just kind of got lost in the shuffle for me. So I don't know. The Dabo and Brian Kelly one was pretty good.
Yeah.
But then you had Oklahoma State and Oregon kind of going at it. Dan Lanning and Mike Gundy.
Yes.
But. No, I don't know what the deal with Jeremiah Love was. Even the receivers for them, was it the little guy face on?
Oh, yeah.
He looked really electric.
Unguardable early.
Yeah.
Like, he was the most electric player on the field.
I think one of you guys made a comparison to Rondale Moore.
I said he looks just like Rondale Moore.
And he did, very much
little
so.
Little guy, explosive, seemed like he could score every time he touched the ball,
mm-hmm.
and then nothing.
And I think Jaden Greathouse had one target. Throughout that entire game. So that's what was weird to me is like the main weapons weren't really getting used. So I don't really know. That was a weird game, but it was a fun game to watch.
Yeah.
But it was very odd how like neither coach really wanted to win that game.
Yeah. It sure seemed that way.
Yeah.
Notre Dame early and then Miami late.
I'd like to see a Mario Cristobal versus Deion Sanders 2-minute game, like to see who handles the clock worse in the 2-minute stretch.
And I know Fred's not here to really get into the weeds on the Florida State Bama game, but Tuna, we do at least have to mention it.
Yeah. Bama got punked. That's just the only way to put it. They were out physicaled. They it was just they weren't they didn't look like they cared. They weren't flying to the ball on defense. Look, this defense, there's zero excuse. These guys are insanely talented across the board. Almost every guy on this defense has NFL talent. And for them to play as lethargic as they did, I don't understand it. It makes no like Kane Womack, he was like, yeah, they didn't surprise us. They didn't shock us. We knew exactly what they were going to do. We were ready for all the tricks and this and that. But, you know, our guys just didn't perform. Well, that's a coaching thing, man. If these guys aren't performing, you got to figure out a way to communicate with these guys.
Right.
Because the talent's there, boys. It's not that. Like, I get it. Ty Simpson didn't look very sharp. I don't know the issues with the running game there. It just Bama looks kind of like a mess, and I'm not going to overreact to week one. I look, Kalen DeBoer's proven that he can coach football. There's just something going on there where there's a disconnect in the locker room and him, or it may not even be him. It may be the coordinators. I don't know, but there's something missing there. And
well, they all came from IU too.
Yeah. But the whole, like, you know, being reunited with Ryan Grubb and he's back. Well, that didn't look very exciting.
No.
It just – and Thomas Castellanos, like, that kid called a shot all summer. And what's funny, I mean, he's got a website and he's telling T-shirts on his website that says, Nick Saban can't save you.
Oh, no.
And I think that's hilarious. And it's like, for a guy to talk as much trash as he did and then to go out and back it up, okay. And then he even took shots at his old coach. He's like, yeah, we had a difference of philosophy with me and Bill O'Brien up at Boston College. So it's like he just doesn't hold back. Look, like it or love it, I love this stuff in college football. You know, the kid could be a little bit obnoxious, but I like villains in college football. I like guys that talk trash. I like when they go out and back it up.
Then you must love Pavia at Vandy.
You know what? I don't like Pavia, but I love that it's in college football.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know if Castellanos had any brothers get arrested after the game, but Pavia's got one up on him there.
I'm not even sure it was after the game.
It may have been during the game.
I'm not so sure it wasn't during the game.
Well, good for them.
And I had mentioned his brothers, I think, to you or maybe to Fred. I said, do you know anything about this? This was a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
I said, you know anything about this guy's lunatic brothers? And they were like, no. I said, dude, he's got two lunatic brothers that show up at every game, like in shirtless, wearing overalls and straw hats. And
is he like the dollar store Djokovic?
Maybe. I mean, it's crazy. But anyway, any other big surprises? Is there a game that I'm missing here that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, the biggest positive surprise that I seen this weekend was Tennessee. Joey Aguilar, I dogged on him quite a bit. Kid was good. Looked really good. Tennessee, I think, is going to be just fine. Their defense looked pretty solid. Offense was able to run the ball. Joey made every pass you could think of. I was all over Syracuse in this game to cover that spread, and I swallowed my pride on that one. I was like, Tennessee looks like a competitor. I really thought that they were going to have kind of a bit of a rebuild year. I think that's probably the biggest surprise that I'd seen this weekend. Maybe like a surprise on the negative side would be Kansas State going out and struggling against North Dakota.
They should have lost.
Yeah. So that's kind of two clunkers in a row with Kansas State. Let's keep an eye on that situation.
Yeah.
And then I guess one more positive that I'll go with is the way that South Florida played. Now, Byron Brown, he missed all of last year with that injury. I think he played the first game and he was hurt, and then it was a medical red shirt. That kid came out with his hair on fire. He looked absolutely amazing, and they punched Boise State right in the mouth.
Boy, they did.
And I'm really excited to see the South Florida team going forward. And Byron Brown is like, I mean, that kid's electric. And if you can get a shot to watch him play, tune in. And South Florida's got some big games. They've got Florida this weekend. I believe they play Miami.
They play Miami this weekend.
It's Florida this weekend.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Miami's playing Bethune.
Oh, well then, Colin. Colin has sent me one of his picks.
That's one way to avoid an 0-4 week is go ahead and pick week three's games, Colin.
I'm going to – so they play University of Florida?
Yeah, they play
I'm going to assume that was a typo.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to put Florida – we're going to replace
Miami.
We'll
look at his other picks and see if they're
Florida.
Even playing this weekend.
Yeah. Did he go to the other week?
He may have went to week three.
But, yeah, well, whether it's Miami or Florida, that's – going to be a fantastic ball game to watch.
Yeah, but as far as surprises, I think that pretty much sums it up.
And
I mean,
let's real quickly touch on Bill Belichick's first game as college head
coach. Oh yeah, we have to. Like I said, I put a little bet on TCU before this game started. I was just kind of curious. I was more like we said last week, this was a curiosity game. So I didn't really have full faith in it. And I remember Gio Lopez down at South Alabama. And I'm like, this kid's actually, he's got some talent. Belichick, I don't really know. They could work with him. And I'm like, Steve Belichick, he's a good defensive coordinator. So we'll see. But I'm like, Sonny Dykes, veteran team. Hoover is a solid quarterback. Probably he finished with the best quarterback rating out of anybody this weekend. But after that first drive, I was like, oh, no, North Carolina could be a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, MJ was applauding up there. You had, you know, Lawrence Taylor.
Roy Williams was up there.
Randy Moss. Like, everybody was in there. I'm like, oh, man, this is probably the wildest that Chapel Hill's ever been for a football game. And then reality set in.
And it set in quick.
And I think that's it's going to be a problem down there in Chapel Hill. And I got to say, I love seeing it. you know, nothing against Belichick. I've just hated North Carolina my entire life. And sorry that you have to coach them. And I'm pulling against you every game. And you may end up 0-12. And look, we know he took that job so he could get his son the head coaching job when he retires.
Right.
His son would have been better off staying out there at Washington.
Yeah. I agree.
I think this is really going to set his son back in his career.
I agree.
Because this is a sideshow.
And, you know, and look, I get it, a lot of, you know, and all the pregame interviews and the sit-downs and ESPN doing the feature stories on him. I mean, it was basically a one-team ball game that there happened to be two teams playing in.
Yeah.
And I thought TCU, not only their football team reacted in the way you would expect a team with their kind of veteran leadership and their coaching too, but their social media department reacted
as well
in spectacular fashion.
Damn right.
If you haven't looked, just go look up TCU football's Twitter account, and they were incredible coming off of that game in their pettiness and trolling and kind of throwing it in the face of everybody that, you know, there was another team there, and we did, you know, stomp a mud hole in you type of thing.
Well, let's look back at this summer and the storylines that led college football talk during the summer. If you take away the transfer portal and NIL and conference realignment,
all that nonsense,
the two biggest things that were shoved down our throat were Arch Manning and Bill Belichick.
That's right.
And needless to say, disappointments.
Week one was a bit of a thud.
Yes.
Well, so that puts a pretty good capper on week one. Now, week two, originally, and you and I were talking about this when you were over here on Sunday, we kind of, you know, thought, well, there's a lot of games where it's, you know, a big team playing a buy-in team and things like that. But the deeper we looked at it, there are several games of real interest coming up this weekend. And I believe the first one of real interest is being played right across the street over here on Friday night when James Madison comes to town to play a team in Louisville that looked great in week one. But like you said, we don't know a lot about. We expect James Madison to be a legitimate factor in their conference, albeit they're in the Sun Belt, but they're a good football team. And Tuna, we've talked about this game on our conference preview show with the ACC and with James Madison being a team to look out for in the group of five. What do you think about this game on Friday?
Look, I've went back and forth on this. The reality of the situation is Louisville's a better football team than James Madison. The thing that will cause somewhat of a concern is a lot of people pencil James Madison in as that group of five to make the playoff. When you look at their schedule, Louisville's the only game on that schedule. So we know that they're going to throw the absolute kitchen sink at this game to get through with it. I also believe that Louisville has a shot to compete for an ACC championship this year. If you feel like that you can win the ACC championship, you cannot be concerned about James Madison coming to your house and playing you.
I completely agree.
Louisville should go out there and handle business and cover that 13.5 point spread. And I'm disappointed if Louisville doesn't win this game by 17 plus points.
Right.
I feel like that's a disappointment if that happens.
Like, I'm not saying it's going to be 55-3, but I'm with you. It should be a game that Louisville really controls Now, you know, they're going to give up some points, probably not going to score every time they have the ball because James Madison is a good football team. But you're right. If Louisville is as good as we think they are or can be, they win this game pretty comfortably.
I think the thing with James Madison, there's a little smoke and mirrors here with this team. I think people remember them with Sig when he was there. And you look at last year, they did take a step back. Okay. I mean, they beat Gardner Webb by a touchdown last year. Everybody looks at the UNC game where they hung 70 on North Carolina.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. I think Ballard High School probably could have put 70 on North Carolina last year. You go through their schedule last year and you look at what they lost to Louisiana Monroe. They lost to Georgia Southern. They beat Old Dominion by 3. They lost to App State, and they lost to Marshall. Okay, that's not a team that Louisville should be scared of. I really believe that. And if you see James Madison last week, they couldn't really throw the ball. They ran like crazy. They ran for like 300-plus yards. You're not going to do that against us. You're going to have to throw the ball against us.
Right.
I just feel like we are a much better football team than them. Now, I wouldn't, like I said, they're going to throw the kitchen sink at us. There's going to be some weird trickery early on. You weather that early storm, throughout the course of the game, Louisville should really control this game.
Yep.
And unfortunately, there's an NFL game that night, but if not, it would have been the only real game worth watching on TV. And I think Isaac Brown has a chance to become a household name. If when people get to see him, unfortunately, we're probably going to have to wait till October 17th when we play Miami on a Friday night. Because this kid, look, I'm really trying not to just sound like a homer or speak with hyperbole here at all. I wouldn't trade him for any other running back in college football. This kid just has it. It's different. His jump stop, he doesn't drop speed at all. He pulls away from guys. He creates his own holes. This kid is pure electricity. I haven't seen an open field runner like him since Lamar Jackson was in Louisville. And I know you're saying, Tuna, these comparisons, it's nuts. Like, I look at him and I see a combination of Reggie Bush and Lamar Jackson. I really believe that. This kid is, I don't know how we were able to keep him. I don't know if we're going to be able to keep him next year. But damn it, I'm going to enjoy the hell out of him while we got him this year.
That's right.
And yeah, I don't know. I feel like he should have a field day. This should be – Louisville should control this game. And if they don't, I'm really going to be upset about it.
Yep, I think we are both in complete agreement on that. So that brings us to starting at noon on Saturday, a game – it's a top 10 game. And this top – or I'm sorry, not top. They're 11th. So, but a highly ranked – Illinois team traveling to Duke.
Yeah.
And Duke is a 3-point underdog at home. What do you think about that, Tim?
I like this Duke team. I really do. They got out to a really slow start last week. A lot of teams did. They really kind of found their rhythm there in the second half. It was good that they got a walkthrough game and they didn't open with Illinois. Illinois' physicality kind of concerns me in this, but I think Duke, just with playmakers alone, can keep this game exciting until maybe the fourth quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if Illinois just kind of gets away with them there in the fourth quarter. But I do like this. This is going to be a fun game. We're going to see what Duke's made out of here. You can't start off slow like you did last week.
No.
Just pick up where you left off in the second half, play a clean game. Duke could have an opportunity to win this game. But all in all, if forced to, I'm taking Illinois to win that game.
Okay. Also at noon, the battle for the Cy-Hawk trophy.
Yeah, man.
Iowa at Iowa State.
Yeah, I think Iowa State is clicking right now. They've got two games under their belt as opposed to just one. They got off into a sluggish start in Ireland, ended up winning that game against K-State. Last week, they rolled. This game being played at Iowa State, I think that's a big difference. This game is a big home game dependent type game. I'm curious to see how their offensive production goes against a legit Iowa defense. I'm going to take Iowa State to win this game.
All right. Also at noon in a another at least one of the teams in the top 25.
I'm so excited about this game, man.
Southern Methodist and Baylor?
Yeah, I really am.
All right.
Baylor, you know, they come off that tough loss last week. I thought was it Sawyer Robinson, their quarterback? I thought he started to look pretty sharp. SMU, I've got a lot of questions. You know, Jennings didn't look that great last week. I was kind of hoping to see him bounce back and really be crisp after the Penn State debacle to end last season. I don't think that SMU has a huge, like, home field advantage. It's kind of a small stadium, and all the fans are just, like, rich, smug people. So I don't really see it. You know, it's not going to be a crazy atmosphere. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning Baylor in this game. I think Aranda rights the ship and goes out and gets them. I really do. So
that
I don't know.
Game will be on the CW, probably with Tom Brenneman on the call.
Probably so, the CW, yeah. So the 12 people that have the CW can get to watch it. I don't know. Yeah, it's. I just feel like these schools are basically real close to each other, Waco and Dallas. So it's, yeah, it's going to be wild to watch, really. That's the noon game I think I'm tuning in for.
All right. 3:30 brings us, as we mentioned before, Ole Miss traveling to Kroger Field to take on Kentucky.
It's an ass whipping, man.
Yeah.
Full-on whipping.
I believe it is, too. The spread is 10. We were talking about it before we came on the air. And I almost feel like a 10-point spread is some sort of a trap where they're trying to get you. Because I feel like Mississippi is going to dog walk them. Am I wrong about that, Tuna?
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. I feel like they are, too. The spread scares the hell out of me. Like, normally I'd be like, yeah, I'm taking Ole Miss to easily cover that. Tennessee or Kentucky doesn't look like they can score points at all. It's going to be one of those weird games. For whatever reason, Stoops coaches well against Lane Kiffin. He really does.
They beat him there last year.
They beat him
right?
there last year. And that's why this is a revenge game. You know, Lane Kiffin wants this game, but they've played Ole Miss tight pretty much every time they've played Ole Miss. So my gut tells me this is a whooping. I just cannot see Kentucky staying within 10 with them, but it does have trap written all over it, man.
Yeah. That's why I'm not putting it on my picks at the end of the show.
I'm curious to see where the spread moves to by kickoff.
Right.
'Cause it could get up to like that, you know, 14 and a half, 15 type range.
Absolutely. And then, really the night game of note.
Hold on. There's one we're skipping by 4:15. That's the South Florida.
Oh,
Florida.
Well, yeah. Which we just talked about. And now Florida is giving 17.5 points in that game. Which seems like a lot. What do you think?
Now you heard me talk about South Florida. I love South Florida in this game. Give me the South Florida at the 17.5. That's one of my picks this week all day long. You know how I feel about Billy Napier. Got nothing for the guy. I think South Florida goes into the swamp, not scared one bit, and just hyped for this game. And they just throw it all out there.
Well, they certainly shouldn't be intimidated playing a ranked team on the road, right?
Not at all.
And they know that they can – compete with a pretty good football team,
and the 95 degrees in Florida that usually gets people
not gonna bother them,
it's not gonna bother them one bit.
Nope.
So this is I love South Florida to cover the 17.5.
Awesome. So that brings us to the night game, top 25 matchup, Michigan at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this game.
Oklahoma right now is 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet it. There's so much about both of these teams that I need to learn. This is going to be a true freshman quarterback for Michigan making a start in a hostile Oklahoma environment. We've seen how freshmen do in their first time at a hostile environment.
Right.
So I'm not sure how to pick this game because I'm not big on Oklahoma. I'm not big on Michigan. I wouldn't be surprised if neither of these teams are ranked by the end of the season. So this is, again, this is one of those curiosity games, Travis, where I'm not picking a winner. I just kind of want to sit back and learn more about these teams.
Yep. I totally agree. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention the game at 7:45 that night. It's a rematch of a game that Nick Saban lost so many years ago. Alabama welcomes in Louisiana Monroe.
Give me Monroe all day long.
They're a 36.5-point underdog.
Yeah, I think Kentucky could beat Bama right now.
But, well, that pretty much gets us through week two of the college football season. We, of course, will have our picks as we roll on in the show at the end. But there's one other relatively large sporting thing that we haven't hardly touched on at all summer. It's the season is getting ready to kick off as we record this tomorrow night. And that is the sport that drives all sports in this country. The NFL kicks off tomorrow night. And I thought that rather than take 3 hours or two episodes and go a team-by-team breakdown of every division, I thought we could just talk who we think are going to be the division winners this year, maybe teams that you think are on the upswing that people aren't talking about, maybe a team or two that you think people are talking about that you don't think will be quite as good as everybody else. And I thought just for my sake, we'll start with what I consider to be the most mediocre division in all of the NFL, and that's the AFC South, where my beloved Indianapolis Colts are unbelievably to me not completely out of the realm of possibility of winning this division. That should tell you all you need to know about this division. Tuna, who you think's going to win the mighty AFC South?
Well, here's the thing. If you just look at it, Houston should win. Just on defense alone, this Houston team's loaded up. But where's Joe Mixon? Is CJ Stroud going to bounce back from a sophomore slump? I don't know. The Colts, they have the talent.
They have a chance to be pretty good defensively.
If they get decent quarterback play, like, it doesn't have to be good.
Game management style, Trent Dilfer style football.
Decent quarterback play. They can actually compete and win this division. They really do have a shot.
Because I think like 9 or 10 wins this division, don't you?
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not 9, but I think 10 is certainly in play.
Yeah, definitely 10. Jacksonville, they got the new coach down there, Liam Coam, who I'm kind of a fan of. He's responsible for the resurgence of Baker Mayfield, and if he can get Trevor Lawrence on track, we've seen Trevor Lawrence have a great year, but it was one great year out of his fifth year in the league.
Yeah.
So 1 out of 5 is not good, but we did see it happen. I'm taking Houston Texans with a chance that the Colts win this.
All right. Now that seems insane to me.
It really does.
But I'm pretty much right with you there. I think Houston is the best overall team in this division.
I think the Titans are the only ones that are out of it.
Yes.
I think those three.
They have no shot.
Yeah.
And the Jags are much like the Colts. We just really don't know. Quarterback is going to have a lot to say about both of those franchises' futures. Well, let's move on to your division of interest. Let's move on to the AFC West. I'm going to assume that I know who you're going to pick to win the AFC West, but does anybody lurking in there cause you any concern?
Well, yeah, I think all three of these teams cause me concern. Yeah. This has been a division that the Chiefs have just kind of ran through for the last 12 years. And, I mean, this has been our division. And Denver has probably quietly put together a top defense in the NFL. Bo Nix looks good. Let's look at the coaches in this league. Okay, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh, and Andy Reid.
Not bad.
You got three Super Bowl champions and one guy that played in, or that coached in a Super Bowl. So it's there. I don't think Vegas is there yet. I think the Chargers definitely could compete to win this. The Broncos for sure. But I still think the Chiefs are better than every team in this division. And until somebody dethrones them in the West, I can't pick against them.
Right. And that makes perfect sense. And I'm right there with you. I think I'm very interested to see how the Raiders are under Carroll this year.
Definitely. Like, I'm a Geno Smith guy, man.
Yeah.
I love Geno Smith.
Yeah.
Ashton Gentry's down there.
Yep.
We know Brock Bowers is just, you know, that guy's an incredible tight end. Already the best in the league after just 1 year. They've got some weapons.
It's funny to go from with the dichotomy of the AFC South to the AFC West. It's like they're not even playing the same sport.
Wait till
almost.
We get to the NFC South.
Oh, boy. Let's move on to the AFC North, which has of local interest. Obviously, Lamar Jackson's Ravens and Freddie's Bengals. What do you think about the AFC North?
Yes, the Ravens, and I don't even think it's close. Pittsburgh, just it's not built to compete with them. Cleveland, not. They're going to be bad. The Bengals, that offense is it's going to be electric, but there is no offensive line there. You got to keep Joe Burrow healthy. That defense is absolutely pathetic. So if you're playing fantasy football this year, I hope that you drafted some Bengals on your team because they're going to have to score about 50 points a game if they plan on winning anything, and they could do it. But I think the Ravens are just so far above everyone in that division.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah,
I would agree with that 100%. Now, the AFC East is intriguing to me from a different standpoint that I have no earthly idea how the Patriots are going to be this year. With I think they've got to be at least a little bit on the uptick, right? Just from a coaching standpoint.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. That's my pick to win the division.
Okay.
That's my pick for the East.
So you've got, you know, the Bills who have been solidly on top for several years.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins, I don't know what to make of the Dolphins. And
I think the Mike McDaniel experiment's kind of coming to an end. I think they're starting to get – his quirkiness was cute when it was winning. Now they're just kind of like, all right, dude, this is ridiculous.
Right.
So
– and the Jets are the Jets, right?
Yeah, they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
but I love Drake May. Vrabel is maybe one of my top coaches in the league. I can't believe Tennessee fired him. Made zero sense.
Well, it's one of the dumbest front office moves in the history of the NFL.
Do not understand that. If a man says he's going to cut his penis off if he won a Super Bowl, you do not fire him because that shows how dedicated he is to the sport.
That is dedication.
Yes. So, no, I look for this defense to be, you know, vastly improved. They're going to have a running game. Ramondre Stevenson, Travion Henderson, the rookie coming in from Ohio State. You give Drake May, he's got a rebuilt offensive line.
I forgot Henderson was there.
Yeah, man.
Man, he's going to be good, I think.
They've got it. Now, the host Stephon Diggs factor, I don't even know if he'll be on the team halfway through the season. That guy,
you never know.
You never know with him. I mean, hopefully they can get it right and he can match up, but I look for the Patriots to sneak up and win this division. I think the Bills take a step back. Josh Allen's going to be Josh Allen. I don't think they have the weapons in the passing game that's really there. The running game will be fine. You know, Ray Davis, the kid out of Kentucky, he's ran really well. They re-signed James Cook. Everything's kind of there. but I just look for the Bills to take a step back. It's kind of the Hard Knocks curse.
Yeah.
So
right.
But I mean, it doesn't mean that Josh Allen's probably not going to win an MVP again. Like, yeah, he'll be right there in it.
Yep.
I just, that defense has some holes in it. I'm getting sneaky here and cute by picking the Patriots, but that's kind of my gut feeling. I just look for them to really compete to win that division.
All right. Well, that gets us through the AFC. Now, as you previously mentioned, let's get to the NFC South. Let's start with the NFC South. Oh, we'll go in the same order as we did.
This is a
with
disaster.
The AFC South. Falcons, Panthers, Saints, and Bucks.
The Bucks have to win this. They've got it all. When you look at the rosters and the teams across the board in this division, the Bucks are just so much better than everybody else. The Saints are going to be a disaster. They're probably going to be, you know, competing for last place.
Yes.
Carolina, I look to be a little bit improved. I think Bryce Young's actually finally starting to get it. They've got some receivers that I like. What's his name? Leggett. Xavier Leggett.
Oh, yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah.
The Falcons, look, we all know about Penix. I just don't think it's at this point yet. Like, it's got to come along. There's a lot that needs to be put around.
I think he's
going to
have an awesome year, and yeah, I don't think their team is going to be very good.
No, yeah.
That's where I'm at with Mike this year.
You know, Drake London, stud. The defense, not fully bought in on that. Kyle Pitts, is he ever going to become anything?
Right.
I don't know. So it's just, there's too many question marks for the Falcons. The Bucs should run away with this division, honestly.
Yeah.
So.
NFC West.
Okay. I'm saying the Rams win this division, but I'm saying that assuming that Matthew Stafford is healthy and is going to play. If you take that out of the equation, look, this Rams defense, they're young, man. They're young and they're good. I thought the way that the Rams used to trade their draft picks like it was nothing, I was like, man, in 5-6 years, the Rams are just going to be a joke. Well, they were able to finagle and be able to draft some insanely young talent, and they do not whiff on their draft picks. And it's Sean McVay, just a great coach, man. So assuming Stafford's there and plays, I think the Rams get this. I'm not going to put the 49ers are on a downhill slide. Shanahan, great coach. Incredible what he's able to do. They have no receivers yet. I mean, they're all hurt, everybody. I think the only healthy one is a dude that got shot before the season, yeah. Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a disaster over there. And it got so bad that they traded for, the kid from Kansas City, Sky Moore. Like, so he's going to get playing time.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a disaster out there. Obviously, you got CMC. How much does he have left in him? But still, I don't see it. This isn't the big, scary 49ers defense that we're used to.
No.
Arizona, I like this team. Arizona could win this division. A lot of people talk about Kyler Murray. I like Kyler Murray. I think he's kind of coming along a little bit. He's got some receivers that I like. The defense played really well toward the end of the season last year. And then Seattle. Seattle comes down to Sam Darnold. Are we going to get the Sam Darnold that we've seen in the Vikings last year? I don't think we are. Who knows? There's a lot of question marks. The Rams should win this division, but Stafford is the key there.
All right. NFC North. All right. The North.
When we talk about this division, I want to congratulate everyone associated with this podcast for being the only sports cast or the only sports podcast to not mention Micah Parsons.
That is true.
All summer long.
That is true.
When it was traded.
Is true.
We did it, boys. So Green Bay instantly becomes a competitor to win the Super Bowl with him on there. They were already loaded up.
And clearly they make that move because they feel like our time is right now.
We have a window and we've got to do this.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's great for Green Bay. Detroit, We all know about Detroit and Dan Campbell. Those two teams are going to go for this. I don't think Minnesota can compete. I'm not a J.J. McCarthy guy. I just don't see it there. The Bears, they got the defense or the offensive coordinator. Was it Ben Johnson from Detroit? He's the new head coach there. Maybe we'll see some improvement. Lord knows they have all the talent at all the positions.
Well, I believe just the coaching upgrade is worth a win and a half this year.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I really believe that.
Yeah. It's just, I think the Bears are almost kind of cursed right now. And it just seems like every move they make bites them in the ass. I feel like this is a two-team race, the Packers and the Lions.
Yeah, so. I agree. And then we go to the NFC East, which kicks off the NFL slate tomorrow night. The Eagles and the Cowboys renew their storied rivalry. And Tuna, tell Colin why the Giants are going to finish last in this division this year.
Well, I don't think they are.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding.
I think the Cowboys are going to finish last. I honestly, look.
If you play
Jackson Dart and let him go through the growing pains early, I think by the end of the year, the Giants could be kind of halfway competitive here. I don't know if it's enough to get excited about. Your season's still going to suck, but at least you're not the Cowboys. So, I don't know. I feel like the Cowboys are just a disaster. But as far as the teams that are good in this, like Washington and Philly, both those teams could win the Super Bowl.
Sure.
They're both there.
And I'm not sure that there's been, that I can remember, I mean, maybe when RG3 came to Washington, but I don't remember this much positive momentum and feeling about a Washington football team in 20 years.
Well, I think the Dan Snyder thing, the fans, like that killed the players and the fans. So every year that he was there, I mean, imagine if you're a fan your whole life and then this asshole buys the team that you can't stand and he screws up everything.
Everything. The like, stadium, the team, the players, the atmosphere. You know, everything.
Yeah, it's all bad. So, like, I think they're finally got rid of that. Like, they shedded their skin, their Dan Snyder skin, and they're, like, this new team now.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, and I'm excited for it, man. Like, they were a fun team to watch play last year.
And that's a great football town if the town is engaged. Washington, I've been out there enough. And I know enough people out there that were huge Washington fans, you know, in the glory days, obviously in the 80s or whatever, and the early 90s to a certain extent. But I think you're right. The will of the people out there was basically killed by the ownership.
Yeah, it was broken.
And so it's kind of cool to see a kind of a storied franchise like that come back up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at least – whether or not, and I do think they're going to have a successful year this year, and they're going to be good. But it's good for the league, I think, to have, and you know, maybe they'll tear down that dump out in Landover and put a stadium somewhere relatively close to Washington, D.C., where the local people can finally get back behind the team.
There's been a lot of talk about that lately.
Well, it almost has to happen.
Yeah. And well, the thing is, when you look at the NFL, I feel like there's two divisions that are just old school where they haven't changed. And it's like, you know, you've got the NFC East with the real rivalries there and the NFC North. Like those teams have been together and played against each other.
Absolutely.
Forever. So there's an old school feel to that. And it's nice to have a little bit more of a rivalry back with Washington being involved in it. We'll see. I mean, Jaden Daniels, does he keep it up? I think they got a steal in a 7th-round draft pick, Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, who they seem to love, a little running back there. He didn't play last year at Arizona because of eligibility issues, but they love him so much, they traded Brian Robinson Jr. away. Mm. So Boy,
that's something.
Yeah, and I mean, they got some really good receivers down there. You know, Terry McLaurin and Debo, and I mean, they've got it going on, and I think they can compete with Philly. Philly's obviously loaded. They're you know, Super Bowl contender. That roster almost is insane that a roster can be built like that in the salary cap era.
Right.
Look, if you're looking at the NFL, there's two rosters that just stick out. It's Philadelphia and Baltimore. Those two teams are just, on paper, so much better than everyone
and
else.
And I'd be fine with the Super Bowl of that.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't hate that at all.
I would be fine with that.
Yeah. Philly's a wagon, man. Washington, they have a chance to beat them to win this division, but I am still going to pick Philly until somebody dethrones them.
Right. I think you almost have to, unless mm-hmm. you're, you know, really trying to land on a flyer there. But, you know, Eagles are the Eagles until they're not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Definitely.
Well, that was a relatively quick run through the NFL, but we had to at least start with that and get through a bit of a preview. As the season goes on, of course, we will be getting deeper and deeper into the NFL. Now, this is a part of the show where, you know, typically I would call last call and, you know, we'd start with Fred or whatever, and he would you know, want to give his 17 picks of Charleston Southern and Iona or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But tonight we don't have that. So I thought we could just do our picks quickly. I've got, well, you don't have to be quick, but I have Colin's picks here. Then we'll go for your picks. Then I'll do my picks. And then we'll call last call for any thing here at the end. But your picks this week, after a 2-3 week last week, what do you have going on for this week?
All right, I'm going to start off going against something that I always swear by. Never bet on your team. I'm taking Louisville to cover the 13.5 points. That is one of my picks this week. Then I'm going to take Colorado to cover 23.5 at home with Delaware and the Blue Hens showing up. Colorado played good against Georgia Tech. They really impressed me. Caden Salters looked good. I like them to cover that. Then I'm going to go to Syracuse to rebound and cover the 6.5 at home in the whatever it's called dome now against UConn and the Huskies.
Is it not the Carrier? I'm sure it's not.
It's not the Carrier Dome anymore. Somebody else got it.
I'm sure they did.
And then I'm going to take Iowa State in a rivalry game -3 at home to beat Iowa. Those are my four picks. South Florida. So we're doing four picks, right?
Five.
Oh, five? Well, yes. Then South Florida's my fifth. 17.5.
What's the spread on that Iowa State game again?
3. Iowa State's favored by 3.
All right. Colin looking to bounce back after the aforementioned 0-4 start last week. He's taking Illinois -2.5 at Duke. He's taking Southern Methodist -2.5 against Baylor. He's taking the over 50.5 in the Kansas-Missouri game, which I don't even think we mentioned.
No, we didn't mention that. God,
We skipped right over that. That may be one of the
best
games.
That's probably the game of the weekend.
Yeah, possibly, and let's talk about that here in just a minute.
Okay.
Because as I was scrolling through and I did not write that one down, I'm glad that Colin mentioned that, because when I saw, you know, last week when I was looking at these games, I said, oh, well, that's the game I really want to watch. We will talk about that briefly here in just a second. He is taking another over, Michigan and Oklahoma over 45.5. And then he's doing something that I don't think anybody's ever done on this show before. He's taking a first half over. Not the first half over. He's taking a first half spread of, this is the one with Southern Florida, and he had it against Miami, but it's actually against Florida. He has Southern Florida getting 9.5 in the first half.
Okay.
Getting 9.5 in the first half.
Okay.
My picks are as follows. I have the Fighting Pavia brothers getting 1.5 at Virginia Tech. I have, after all the back and forth between Gundy and Dan Lanning, I'm taking Oregon to absolutely step on the throats of Oklahoma State. I have them covering the 28.5.
Well, they should. They spent $40 million on their roster.
That's right. I am going to overreact to Kansas State's struggles and predict that Army covers the 17.5 this week. I have an over as well. I have Western Kentucky and Toledo going over 59.5. And then, now, if you've followed this show, you know that anytime I have a lock of the week, it is almost, I would love to go back and know my, it has to be like 2-50 in my locks of the week. one of my losses last week was my lock of the week.
Yeah.
Well, my lock of the week this week, and maybe my early lock of the season, is UNLV as a 2.5 point underdog at home against UCLA.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I love that bet, Travis. I'm gonna take that myself.
That is.
I hope this is one of the locks of the week that you win. UNLV looks like they've got it together.
I think so. And yeah. And UCLA looked worse than they did last year.
They're a disaster.
And I hate it for Tino Cinceri, who was IU's quarterback coach, who went out there to be the offensive coordinator. And I hope they get it turned around. But my God, the quarterback. You know, it's so crazy, like, as you were talking about. This guy, it's all we heard about in the preseason last year. He's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. And all that. Of course, that didn't work out. Now he's transferred out to UCLA. He's got a fresh start. And all he did was dirt about 80% of his passes. Colin and I watched it. I sat down here and watched it
till
halftime. And I said, these guys have no shot to win this game. I'm going to bed.
Yeah. I think Tennessee definitely won that trade. They are better with Aguilar.
I don't think there's any question about that. But since we did skim over what I think both of us are a game we're very much looking forward to, let's talk quickly about this Missouri-Kansas game.
Yeah, 3:30 game, too. I don't know how I just completely skipped over this. Look, I've kind of talked some smack about Lance Leopold. Kansas has looked really good in these first 2 weeks. They played in week zero. They played last week. They're clicking on all cylinders. Jalen Daniels, phenomenal. He has played at a different level. In the words of Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend.
Nice.
You're stepping into Missouri, and look, Fred and I, we talked about it. We love this Missouri team. Missouri, this is a bet that I think I'm going to jump on also. I think Missouri handily covers the 6.5. Do not fall for the Lance Leopold trap. This is what he does. He makes you think they're good. And then they play a good team and they crap their pants. So this is, I'm 100% on Missouri here. I love this Missouri team, man. They're going to cause fits in the SEC.
Yeah, we were all so high on them in our SEC preview, and this is really, it's a rivalry game.
Oh yeah,
a huge rivalry game, and both teams should be chippy. The atmosphere should be a lot of fun, but I think Missouri is just a clearly superior football team.
This is the type of environment, the type of game that Drink excels in.
Yeah,
like Drink loves these type of games, and he is going to want to pour it on Kansas. So, yeah, I'm all for Missouri in this game. I cannot believe we forgot that they were playing.
We just skipped it. Yeah. Of course, I didn't write it down in my show notes here. I totally missed it. But thank you, Colin, for putting that in your picks and bringing it to my attention, because I'm sure that we would have heard about that had we not mentioned that game.
Couple good rivalry games to start out. You got the Cy-Hawk game at noon, and then followed up 3:30 with Kansas Missouri.
Yeah,
see, that's the thing about college football, even a down week has some gems in it. You know what I mean?
Like, and I think we pointed out that there's several games that should at least garner the attention of a, you don't even have to be a massive college football fan, of an average college football fan will look and go, I've heard of those two teams. That should be a good game.
Yeah. And it's going to be better football each week.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. There was some sloppy football last week.
Yes.
But it's going to get better and better.
As
quarterback play will get better. It was pretty bad across the board, I feel like.
As will our picks get better and better.
I hope so. If as not, it's going to be a hell of a season.
Well, we're right at about 500 right now.
I'll be working four jobs by October.
But now, typically this would be the point in the show where I would do our last call and then say that, you know, we'll see you next week or whatever. But we're going to do last call, and then I'm going to hold the end of the show open because we're still not sure logistically if Freddie's going to be able to call us or if I'm just going to come back on with his picks. So we won't have that part at the end of the show. I will do that here probably tomorrow morning after I hear from him and figure out how that's going to work. So with that being said, since there's just two of us here tonight, Tuna, last call.
Yeah, I want to talk about a subject that is probably one of my most favorite things to talk about, and that's the NBA.
What? I had already pushed my microphone up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched it happen.
I immediately pulled it back down.
No. There's a story out of Los Angeles.
Oh, my God. I heard about this today.
Which I find absolutely amazing.
Do you think this is real?
I do. I really honestly do. And what's the uncle's name that they're trying to cause an escape? Uncle Willie or something like that?
It is Uncle Willie.
All right. So what
this
is it?
This story has everything.
Steve Ballmer, that's his name, the guy that owns the Clippers?
Yes, the big guy from Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess he started a fake landscape company, or was it a real landscape company?
Well, I think the details are murky.
Okay, there was a landscape company.
There is
We're not sure if they actually did landscaping or not. But anyway, they paid Kawhi Leonard, what was it, $21 million?
I believe that was about the number.
To not do any work for him. And it was a way that people were saying to get around the salary cap. So
in college athletics, this used to happen all the
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely.
The no-show job.
Typically, you would see that, but not in leagues where they're already getting paid millions of dollars.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
In my time, when I knew this was going on, I'm not going to mention any particular schools or programs, but there is a very famous program that I knew some of the guys that were on the team that had a job at a particular company, and their job was they came in the morning, and in the back room, there was a room with a card table in the middle and four or five cots.
Yeah.
And they would come in the morning, and they could sleep or eat or whatever they wanted to do. And I want to say, when I asked a guy one time how much they made a week doing that, it was like $200.
Yeah. I don't think you
Which
even
was
have
just,
to
like they just wanted to get food money back then, and it was illegal according to the NCAA. So you used to see a lot of that nickel dime stuff in college.
Yeah, and it a lot of it had happened in the summer of their freshman year before they started because
That's
they
right.
weren't allowed to have jobs. But you don't have to be vague about it because every single college did it.
Right.
Like, I'll say it right now. I've seen it firsthand with Louisville. I know Kentucky. Hell, it wasn't just like 5 or 6 years ago. Kentucky got in trouble for the hospital
thing.
They had
the thing at the hospital.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something that's always happened. But in the NBA, and for it to be $21 million to get around a salary cap, I'm curious how many football NFL owners are like, you know what? Wonder if we can.
Well,
I'm curious if Patrick Mahomes has a car wash that he works at.
The reason I asked, like, do you think that's real?
I really do.
Is that I just can't imagine a front office with all the attorneys and the and the different business people that work there or whatever, looking at something like that and going, oh yeah, that's, we can definitely get away with that.
Well, I think there's an arrogance level where they're saying this is so asinine that we'll never get caught, because who would think that we're already paying this guy X amount of money,
$50 million,
and we're going to give him an extra $21 million to do some fake landscaping work. Now, I'm curious if Kawhi Leonard would have just went out and cut the grass one time. Would he have, would it have been fine and kosher?
Well, I mean, who's to say what you can set the, you know, I can pay a guy.
The market determines, yeah.
I can pay a guy $50 to cut my front yard, or I can pay him $21 million.
I'm just saying. Like, if you want me to cut your front yard, I'm charging you more than $50. But, like, it's, I don't know. But just to not do any work. And then they said that it was actually Uncle Willie that was doing the landscape. I don't know where this Uncle Willie came from.
I don't know. This story is going to get probably, I mean, it just broke today.
Yeah.
Like, this is the tip of the iceberg on this thing. If this is real, it's going to end up being a huge story and a huge deal.
I almost want it to become like they start investigating all kinds of other teams, and it's just all over the place.
Which would be hilarious, yeah, man.
That's what I want. Just chaos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's my NBA talk for a while.
Well, that was when you said NBA, I really piqued my, and I had kind of forgotten that had happened today. But yeah, that's definitely a story that I'm glad that you brought up, and I'm glad we could touch on it. like I said before, I'm not sure if Fred is going to be able to call in or not. His cell reception, as we said early in the show, has been spotty at best out there. I believe they're in Wyoming right now.
Well, here's what I think happened. I think he got the new iPhone, so he's on an iPhone now.
Yes.
I think he turned the iPhone off by accident, and he has yet to figure out how to turn it back on. So he just says, I don't have cell phone service.
That very well might be. Yeah, that very well might be. But I will either be back with a phone call from Fred to close the show, or at the very least, I will have his picks for next week, and then we will close the show then. Until then, thanks a lot for listening, and we will jump in the time machine and see you tomorrow. All right, and as promised, we are back. It is now Thursday evening, and Fred has gotten a hold of us, unfortunately. He just doesn't have the service out there where he's at to effectively call in this week, but he was able to send me his picks for the week. And as we mentioned at the top of the show last week, Fred was a very solid 4-1 on the week. So here are his picks for week 2. He's taking Rutgers to cover the 15.5 points against Miami of Ohio. He is taking Memphis to cover the 13.5 points against Georgia State. He is taking Western Kentucky. They are getting 7.5 points at Toledo. So good for the local teams to be represented there. And it wouldn't be a week of Freddie's bets without an under, and he does not disappoint. He is taking the under the point total in the Syracuse versus UConn matchup. So that gives you all of our picks for this week. As I stated last night in the first part of this, I'm sure that after a 9-10 week last week, we're bound to have a big bounce back this week, and that is what we are anticipating. I want to remind everybody that we are on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us there very easily. And if you have a friend that enjoys sports and football in particular, and you think they might enjoy the show, please let them know. They can find us wherever they find their favorite podcasts. as I am down here by myself this evening finishing this show up, and we did last call last night. There's nobody for me to shout out or throw around the room to, so I will simply end the show with this. We always thank you all for listening, and so long, everybody.